What do ghost ships, deep space signals, flight simulators, U.S. air bases, teetotaling, pronunciation privilege, and suspected sodomy have in common? Find out on this episode of the 12th House Tomfoolery Podcast.
Hello, and welcome to the 12th House Tomfoolery Podcast. I'm Tiffany, and I'm here with Kate.
Hi.
You want to tell them about what we're doing today in the year of our Lord 2023?
The year of our Lord, indeed. It is a 7-year, very spiritual year. Sevens in numerology. So we're back in our bullshit talking about numerology and shit like that. But we are super excited to be back. This is our first episode recording in 2023. We released one, but that was from the archives.
I had to edit out a lot of like December references when I was doing that.
Oh, did you? That's so funny.
I was like, just going to snip that out right there.
Yep. Not December anymore. But we needed a little hiatus. I started a new job. I had to move. Tiffany's got her own stuff going on. So we took a little hiatus.
And we gave you back. 12 episodes. So you're fine.
We did. You're back fine. To back to back. But we're super excited to start, season 2 of the podcast. Yeah. So we are starting. We were going to do an episode for Aquarius season, but in typical ADHD fashion, we didn't. We talked about it.
Sorry, Aquarians. Then
we didn't follow through. But what we are talking about today does have a little bit of an Aquarian bent, but it is definitely solidly a starter for Pisces season, which is the 12th house. So perfect for our podcast. Mm. So we're going to be talking about travel mysteries. I'm not sure what Tiffany's doing. I'm just as excited to hear about it as you guys are. I am going to be doing the different theories about Malaysia flight 370. The disappearance of that plane, which this topic is truly perfect for the 12th house and the archetype of Neptune, Pisces, and the 12th house, which are all the same archetype, just in different places and different iterations of it on our chart. But to go into that archetype a little bit, the 12th house, Pisces, Neptune are all very watery. The 12th house is the house of kind of mystery, like nobody really knows what's going on. It's the end of the story before the beginning, before we go into the first house of Aries. There's confusion with astrologers about what it is. It's the unconscious, the house of the unconscious. It's the house of oneness, the house of like Dharma and reaching a place where you're above your ego. But if you don't get to that point, it's the house of mystery, the house of sorrow, the house of self-undoing, the house of like disillusion, medical problems. It's very confusing and very watery. And Neptune, that rules the 12th house and rules Pisces, is, we've been over this before, but it is a planet that is neither benefic or malefic. It's just very watery. I use this analogy in another episode, but it's like Neptune is also creativity. It's the movies, right? Like you watch a movie and you feel like you're in it. Like the first time they did that, the radio program where the guy said aliens were invading and everyone thought they really were, very Neptunian, like watching a movie, very Neptunian. You feel like you're a part of it, but it's a silkscreen. It's not real. And Neptune can function really well as creativity, as unconditional love, as psychic phenomena. It can also function as illusion, as deception, as deep manipulation. So it's very water, and it rules water. Like Neptune is water. Water disasters usually involve Pisces or Neptune. And Saturn is about to ingress into the collective 12th house and into Pisces. So stock your water. But it's good to talk about Pisces and Neptune right now because it is Pisces season. And Saturn is right on the precipice in the next 2 weeks of ingressing for the next 3 years into the collective 12th house and into wherever Pisces is in your chart. So I'm sure I will be talking a lot about Pisces in the next 3 years. So little introduction. We're super excited. And Tiffany, do you want to get us started with your Robert Stack-esque mysteries.
Yes. So I was texting Kate because I was like, what did you say that this house is about? So she's like, any travel mystery. I was like, great, thanks. So to keep with the water theme, we'll have a little quick maritime mystery about the abandoned Mary Celeste. I'm just going to do two short little snippets about two little stories that are totally different for funsies. So the now infamous ship was sighted on December 4, 1872 near Azores on the course for Gibraltar. The crew of the De Gracia, a different ship, another vessel following a similar course, spotted the ship through a spyglass, noting that it was sailing erratically, kind of yawing slightly, and her sails were torn. So, as the De Gracia approached the eerily empty ship, its crew saw that there was no one at the helm or even on deck. So the ship was taking on a bit of water, but was still seaworthy. And the cargo of 1,700 barrels of alcohol was untouched.
Get me on that ship.
I know.
Party time.
Everyone's missing and all the alcohol's still there.
Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah. Maybe it was more barrels, but they're like, 1,700 barrels. The captain's log was on board, but no entries were made since the 24th of December, which was some 10 days previous. And there was no sign of a struggle, only a missing lifeboat, a frayed rope trailing from the stern of the ship. And there's a myriad of theories about the crew's disappearance, but none really hold up.
So when was this? When did you say this was?
It was December 4th, 1872. And then the last entry was on 24th of November in the captain's log.
Okay, so a long 10 time days ago. Off.
Yes, okay. Over 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Still weird and spooky. So totally. The most popular seems to be a complicated theory based on vapor emissions from the barrels of alcohol forcing the crew to abandon the ship. But those who first boarded the empty vessel reported no fumes, and that part of the ship was still closed up, so they should have been able to smell it. Piracy is out because, again, all the alcohol was still there and untouched. Mutiny, question mark? Well, it was a smaller crew, and the captain was there with his family. So I think it was two children. I'm going to see if it lists on this specific article. But they were well-respected amongst the crew, and likewise, the crew was well-known for its discipline and professionalism. Drunkenness was also suggested as a cause of accident, but the captain was a teetotaler. I don't know
what teetotaler. That is. A teetotaler.
What is
it's
that?
It's like people who... You've never heard the word teetotaler? The phrase?
No, I haven't.
It's like a straight edge, like somebody who walks like not touching the booze, not doing any sort of tomfoolery. Yeah.
Literally, God bless you, because I was like, teetotaler? Teetotaler. What is this?
I can't believe you never heard that. That's so funny.
I don't know. Wild. Anyway, so he was a teetotaler. And again, there was no sign of a struggle. Contrary to popular culture and fiction, there are no reports of untouched breakfast with still warm cups of tea on the captain table. However, the mystery needs no embellishment. Eight crew and the captain's wife and son were missing, including the captain. And there was no real answer why. And then people just say maybe the ship was cursed. And I looked at several other articles and they're all just kind of like, well, I don't know.
It's very 12 Houseian. That's the way this Malaysian thing is. They don't know. But so the people definitely were on board the ship. Like the ship left with these. That is wild.
They had already dropped something off in another article and were going somewhere else. And there were other theories that it's, again, I read like several random articles, so it's all mished together in my head. But someone's saying like maybe it was water spouts, which is like those, you know, mini hurricane type spinny things on the ocean, which are horrifying. But again,
the technical term, those mini spinning things, hurricane things in the ocean.
Yeah, exactly.
The weather with Tiffany. Beware the mini spinny things on the ocean, guys. They're going to be really intense today.
I don't know, bro. I've got miniature thalassophobia. So any of that stuff, I'm like, I'm out.
Is thalassophobia like fear of deep ocean stuff?
Yes.
Yeah, I got it too. Yeah, that shit down
there. I slowly came to the realization over the last few years that I was like, I'm not scared of the ocean. Like, I'll swim in it and do stuff, but it's deep ocean, deep water that stresses me out. I'm like, oh,
yeah.
Will I go in a haunted house? Yes, I'm unhinged. You want to go on a cruise? You might have to give me some,
something. What if it was a deep, dark demons of the ocean themed haunted house? Would you go to that?
Yeah, because I'm not in the ocean.
Okay. All right.
Now, if it's a haunted house in the deep ocean on top of the water, I'd probably be like, get the fuck out of here. No, I'm not doing that.
Worst case scenario. That's so funny.
Hard pass.
Yeah.
So I think you're really going to like the second one I picked. Oh, I'm just scrolling. Okay. Anyway,
I was just thinking, I'm surprised there isn't like a horror cruise like that. All those people that go to McCamey Manor, like that really want to be immersive. They should do like an actual horror cruise. That's not actually torturing people, but like has spooks and scares on it. I would go on that. Well, would I? I'd be trapped on the ocean. See, it's terrifying even to think about.
I think I could still do a cruise even, but when I see people going like through the Drake's Pass, for example, up near Alaska where the water is so turbulent, I'm like, get out of here. Zero. Yeah. No, absolutely not.
Yeah.
Hell no.
Yeah. I've never done a cruise. I took like a drunken sailboat ride at a bachelorette party on the ocean, but I've never like been on, you know, like very far out where you're like, you can't see land. Ever.
Yeah. I mean, I've done little boat things and I've done like jet skis in the bay, like right next to the ocean. And I went way out. Like I was jumping pretty big waves. I was sore the next day, but like, I'm not scared of water, but deep water, I'm like, hard no, I'm out. No fucking way.
Yeah. I saw that Planet Earth episode where they've got that, like, you know, that giant, which, okay, I'm sorry, I don't mean to get unhinged so soon, but that giant fish, you know, the really terrifying one that's got like the light that hangs from its head and the giant jaws.
Oh, the anglerfish.
Yeah. So I think I may have posted this actually on the 12th house site,
or at least on my personal page. So cool.
I think it's terrifying.
Lantern.
I think it's terrifying, but you want to know something spookier about it? And or yay, go feminine power. The way that they mate. And these anglerfish dudes need to fucking, they need to make their lives a little, they need to take some personal responsibility. Listen to what happens. They mate. I can't remember exactly how they mate. I think it's like, I forget if it like comes from its saliva or what. They mate, but then the anglerfish, the male anglerfish attaches itself to the female body and they become like, they become one. It merges with it. And then its head gets like eaten. It's like on the side of the woman's body. And the body like absorbs it. And then the anglerfish just, I guess its consciousness dies. I don't know. But it becomes part of the female. And then it just like sticks out from the female for the rest of its life. And the female
like feeds it nutrients. Very symbiotic relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. Talk about two souls merging. They merge.
We're but like twin flames.
Yeah. Right. I'm a twin flames. That to me is like, dude, you're not doing much for this relationship. Like child support, a job. No, you're attached to me, feeding off my nutrients. Way to be a provider, anglerfish. Get out of here.
And that's Kate's rant, feminist rant about anglerfish.
It is. Yeah. Anglerfish really get to my
really grinder gears.
Feminist rage. Okay, sorry. Unhinged. What's your second one?
It's called the Wow Signal. So I thought what's more mysterious in travel than space? So this one I thought was very cool. And I looked at so many articles and I was literally Googling like mystery travel and all this stuff. And this was just part of another travel mystery article because I looked at so many and I was like, I'm not doing Amelia Earhart. No.
So
I kept looking another time, but there's tons of resource on that. I wanted something different and fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
So here's one to file under interstellar travel. So late in the evening of 15 of August, 1977 at one of SETI, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence, large radio telescopes, American astronomer Jerry R. Emmon detected a radio signal like no other detected before. The signal lasted over 72 seconds. Every radio detection generates an alphanumeric code on a computer printout. This signal generated an alphanumeric code of 6EQUJ5. Emmon, astonished, simply circled the code in red pen and labeled it WOW. The signal was intense and thus almost certainly artificial, as in not natural and intentionally broadcast. The signal was received at 1420 megahertz, which is the protected spectrum bandwidth reserved for astronomical purposes in which terrestrial transmitters are forbidden to transmit. So hard to be a hoax. There is a possibility that it was an Earth-sourced signal that was being reflected back by a piece of space debris.
Wait, please hold all questions until the end. What? No, but you can cut this out. I'm trying to pull the chart for this to see if it's the same thing as the galactic center. Did you, because the galactic center, they got pingbacks that were 72 seconds. What year did you say this was? And it was August 15th, right?
I can go look for you. It's fine. August 15th, 1977.
Okay. Thank you. Sorry. Go back.
And it's called, I'll just leave it. It's not a big deal. It's called the WOW signal. So you can look that up. And that was with SETI, S-E-T-I. Okay. So you can put those things in and you should get a really good feedback from that.
There's no time, right? I'm just going to pull the chart. It doesn't matter. Okay. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead. Yeah. It's our show. Do whatever you want.
Yeah.
We're going to do whatever we want. So
do whatever we want.
There is a possibility that was Earth sourced, that it was being reflected back to Earth by a piece of space debris. There's also a theory that it could have been from one of the hundreds of satellites orbiting Earth. The problem with this is that after over 35 years of continuous listening and searching, the signal has never been detected again. The recording and alphanumeric code have also been released and made public, and no one's claimed to be its owner or source. So one thing that scientists can't agree on, I know, it's so cool, is that if the signal was indeed extraterrestrial, then the producers of such a signal are likely to be of extremely advanced civilization. The signal would have required an extremely strong transmitter, something vastly more powerful than anything available on Earth. So where does this leave us? Until the signal is detected again or one similar to it, it will remain a curiosity and a tantalizing hint of what a signal from an extraterrestrial world might look like. The Big Ear Telescope, as the receiving telescope is known, is now defunct, but SETI's search for signs of extraterrestrial civilization continues with the hope that one day we will solve the universe's great mysteries of are we alone?
Okay, wow. That is wild.
That's why I didn't tell you about that one. I was like, she's going to love this one.
And do you want to know something really crazy? So I just looked it up because I was like, something funky's got to be going on with either.
Yeah.
The galactic, so the biggest like black hole points are the galactic center, which is at 26, now 27 Sag, the super galactic center, which was at 29 Virgo, now it's at 0 Libra, and something called the Great Attractor. And the Great Attractor is, I'm trying to go through this article really quick, but they have found the Great Attractor holds the mass of over 1,000 trillion suns, and our solar system is hurtling towards it at a speed of 2.2 million kilometers per hour, blah, 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 blah. But in astrology, the Great Attractor is located at 13 to 14 degrees of Sagittarius, but as its discovery is relatively new, the significance behind it is still emerging, blah, 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 blah. But what it represents is we're all magnetic beings with the ability to pull things towards us and be pulled to, fate versus free will. All things lead here. Intergalactic knowledge, extraterrestrial knowledge. It's located out of the sight of the other side of the Milky Way as a symbol for a new truth emerging or a greater truth to be revealed. Guess where Jupiter was on that day? Jupiter expansion.
You're going to have
Great Attractor. The Great Attractor at 1324 Sagittarius and in the first house. Excuse me, not Jupiter. I'm wrong. Not Jupiter. Jupiter was at 29. It was at anaretic Gemini, so anaretic degree of communication. Neptune, which is psychic abilities, like all sorts of, you know, consciousness, was at the Great Attractor, 1324 Sagittarius, on August 15th, 1977. So
yeah.
Wow. And Jupiter was at 29 Gemini, which is the fated degree of communication. Wow, that's wild. Okay. Okay, sorry for my astro talk. If anyone's confused about what that means or wants me to explain more, I'll happily do it on the site. For everyone else who's like, shut the fuck up, I will shut the fuck up. But if anyone is curious about that, I'll happily go into.
We will not shut the fuck, actually. We will not do that. We will never shut up.
Never.
Thank you so much.
Ever. Thank you so much. Thanks.
We will never shut up.
If I ever text you, I'm going to shut up. Just know that it means more texts are coming. If I ever say like, I'm done, it means I'm not done. I intend to be done, but I'm not.
I'm done here in my heart, but I'm going to send you 30 more texts.
Yep. Yeah, exactly. But my brain's not done. Well, that is wild. And I want to and will read more about that. And even in
I think we need to look into SETI. That sounds really neat.
Yeah. Yeah. And they found it in the 70s. In the 1970s, scientists discovered that remarkably, our galaxy was being pulled towards a specific point in the universe. This point has been called the Great Attractor. Okay. Well, Neptune was talking to us from the Great Attractor. Remember, I just said I was done and then I didn't stop. So I am stopping now. And we're going to get into Malaysia Flight 370. So this is another one of those ones where it's a little lengthy. It's going to go on for a bit. I'm going to try and keep it short. But this is a topic that can be deep dived much more than I deep dived. I'm just going to go over the main theories, the main kind of, theories that people have about it. But there is far more information than this. And if anyone wants us to do like a deep dive into any of these theories, I certainly can, because there's way more to be discussed than what we're going to discuss. We're just going to lay out a framework of the different probabilities, possibilities. So you remember this, right? This flight?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. It was wild.
It was all over the news for a hot minute. Yeah.
For a couple of months, I feel like. Personally for me, I found out about this, talk about like being stuck on the cruise or like scary travel things. I first was introduced to this on a flight. I was taking a flight back from Tampa to New York. I was visiting my parents and this flight was lost the day I was taking the flight. So I like turned on, you know, my little like computer screen TV and it was like an airplane has just been disappeared and I was on a plane. So imagine my Virgo anxiety. It was like, not good.
Why would you announce that literally right now? Can we land first?
God. Well, they didn't announce it on the plane. I was watching CNN, you know, like on my TV. Oh. They didn't. The pilot didn't come on and be like, hey guys, guess what? Planes are disappearing. I personally turned on Can you imagine?
Hey guys,
have a safe flight.
I have some not chill news.
Hope everyone's enjoying the flight. Let me make you enjoy it just a little bit less. Mass chaos is going on in the skies. Yeah. Some not chill news. The pilot's like, did anyone get through TSA with any weed? Because I need to smoke some. I'm stressing out a little bit.
Stressing out a little bit.
But yeah, so that was my first hook into it. I watched it the entire flight with bated breath thinking, you know, I was about to disappear. But then I stayed on the story like a cat on a mouse. Cause it was wild. It was wild. There was mass confusion, mass chaos. Nobody knew what happened. And then as so many things pick up so much media coverage and everyone's confused, then, you know, no one ever really found out. The pressure to report on it kind of, as Neptune does, dissolved. And then we got little bits and pieces over the next couple of years. But the impetus to really dive into it from the public consciousness kind of went away. So I stayed on it for like a good year and a half. And it's very Neptunian. Like nobody knows what happened. So we'll get into it and we'll go over the different. Yeah, let's go. So the flight, and I forgot this, perfect, did leave on March 8th, 2014, which is, of course, Pisces season. And I quickly looked up the chart for it. I didn't take a deep dive into the astrology, but I did notice that March 18th, 2014 at 12:41 a.m., the sun was at 17 degrees Pisces, which 5 degrees, 17 degrees, and 29 degrees are fame degrees. Of course, if you have it in your chart, doesn't necessarily mean you're going to be famous. But when big things happen, they usually do have a 5, a 17, or a 29 degree in the chart just because they tend to – it's a Leo degree. It tends to attract public recognition. So I thought it was interesting it happened at 17 Pisces. But – so the plane leaves. It's a regular commercial flight. from Malaysia, from Kuala Lumpur International, going to Beijing International. The vast majority of passengers on the flight were Chinese nationals. There were some, obviously, people from other countries. There was only one American on the flight, and we'll get to him in a second. But it left no issues when it leaves, you know, normal takeoff. It last communicated back to air traffic control 38 minutes after the takeoff over the South China Sea. And then it was lost from air control minutes after that. Air control could no longer see it. It was no longer on its flight path. They contacted military air control to be like, we've got a plane that has derailed. Obviously, it could be, you know, did the plane go down? Is it a hijacking? It's off its thing. Right. So the military gets involved. The military radar tracks it for another hour. There's my Virgo. Raider? Dennis Raider. We could do one on him, the BTK killer. See? Oh my God, so ADD. Radar. It deviated west from the flight path and it crossed the Malay Peninsula and the Andaman Sea. It left the radar range of even military radar 200 nautical miles northwest of Penang Island, which we'll get back to later because Penang is where the captain of the flight was from, which comes into one of the theories. There were 227 passengers on the flight. I was going to get into the numerology of that, but I'll save you from it. I don't want to get too crazy. 239 was the capacity. So it was a pretty full flight. Immediately when the flight was lost, there was a ton of pushback from the Chinese government because the flight was primarily Chinese nationals. And the media coverage of it, kind of everyone was throwing darts at everybody. China was like, did Malaysia take down the flight? What's going on? Malaysia was like, did China take down the flight? Everyone was like, did America take down the flight? Mass chaos, mass confusion.
It's like that. But China. Meme.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Everyone pointing guns.
They're all pointing at each other? Hey.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And it was just mass chaos for a couple of months. And we're going to get into the separate parts of that, but more into the actual what happened. So they sent everybody, America, China, everybody had people going out searching for this flight. They couldn't find anything, which is really wild because you think there would be something from either communication or debris or something, but they couldn't find anything. So the next concrete evidence, like physical evidence that they got was debris that washed ashore in the Western Indian Ocean in 2015 and 2016. So they kept searching, and they finally suspend operations in 2017. Then a private company, Ocean Infinity, which what else do they do? Do they just search for things in the ocean? Ocean Infinity?
I don't know. I'll Google it.
Yeah, go ahead. I didn't. So you be the Virgo on this one. You Google it. But they're a private company not associated with any government. They start a six-month look into it, and they're well-funded. They've got tons of money. They start that in January 2018. That last 6 months. And then they're like, we don't know what the fuck happened. We can't figure it out either. So in this period of time, in these 4 years, tons of conspiracy theories, actual theories, are they one and the same? Who knows? Come out. So we're going to go over the main ones. And the only fact that we have is this debris that has been washed up. That's so everyone now, like as of current day, the main story is, okay, it crashed in the Indian Ocean. We found debris. We can't find the rest of the plane, but we found some errant pieces, which to me is not great proof that it crashed. Like that could be fabricated. I'm not trying to be a conspiracy theorist, but you know, there's a lot of holes in this plot line. It's not like, oh, we found the plane. Here it is. Here's what's happened. It's like, okay, you found like part of a wing that could be from any Boeing, whatever. So Robert, I think his name is Bertharian. He's a lecturer on psychology at the University of London, says, okay, after any sort of catastrophe, the next thing that comes is conspiracy theories because everyone is struck and in awe and is like, okay, we need to figure this out. So there's a lot of, you know, there's a big divide in this story between like conspiracy theories and then let's be rational about it. And there's the interesting thing is there's a lot of people that normally would be on the rational side that have floated into the conspiracy side. And then there's a lot of people on the conspiracy side that have floated into the rational side. So it's just very 12th house-ian. It's very, it's mass chaos. The first thing to come out was this is a blatant cover up, because the physics of it, a Boeing 777, which also seven is the number of spirituality too, 777. It does not have the structural integrity to survive crashing into the ocean. It would, in the physics of it, it would be like a vehicle hitting a concrete wall at terminal velocity. So if it smacked into the ocean, if it was flying, it would completely deconstruct the entire physical structure of this plane. Right. Things would be, some of it would be completely just annihilated, but they're saying the things that would float, like the air seat cushions, like there would be all these things that were floating on the ocean. And with all of these mass governments doing surveillance, something would be seen directly.
Someone
after
would
it.
Find something other than the something. Blank piece of debris.
Because it would be floating. Like it wouldn't all, it wouldn't like crash and then, you know, the plane wouldn't drop and then just go to the bottom of the ocean. It would implode. So everyone's like, this is all bullshit because everyone was surveilling it. I know the ocean's huge, but they had, you know, Doppler, all sorts of stuff. So people are like this.
Well, and they must from have the had get-go. Like a general idea of where it was too, based on the radar signals where they tracked it. So
They did and they didn't because like, we'll get into it. It like went off radar, on radar. Right, I keep saying radar, off radar. But they did have, I mean, they could narrow it down to a place where somebody would have seen something, you know, not, it wouldn't be like, okay, 2 years later, here's some debris. Somebody would have seen something because of the physics of it. It wouldn't have just gone down into the bottom of the ocean.
Right.
Okay. So that was just like the overhead, like this in general, doesn't make any sense. Somebody would have found something. So then we'll get into the different theories. The first one is that hijackers, and we don't know, there's lots of theories about who the hijackers were, took the plane to a remote island. All the air traffickers, all the FBI agents on this identified over 600 possible runways within the radius of where the flight was that the flight feasibly could have landed on, like little remote islands, little remote runways where it's like off air traffic's normal thing. So there's 600 different possibilities of where it could have landed. Why the hijackers were taking it, lots of different theories on that. French air traffic specialists Jean-Marc Garot, Michel Delarche, and Jean-Luc Marchand, I'm probably butchering those names. Sorry, my French is not very good. Launched a full website saying that it landed on Christmas Island, which I am going to read because this article has so much like flight jargon that I just can't regurgitate. So I'm gonna read the article on this because it's a lot of science. So hold, and sorry, just going to audit it to you. But this is this theory. Okay. The MH370 search doesn't add up. An engineer has found a new possible crash site and an infrared sinister end for passengers. The most extensive search in aviation history has failed to find Malaysian Airlines flight MH370 after it mysteriously diverted course on March 8th, 2014. Now an engineer at a top Danish university has claimed we've been looking in the wrong place. He has come up with a possible new flight plan that confirms the data we have, and it looks nothing like those that the guided search efforts before. It puts M370's probable crash site off Christmas Island south of Jakarta, and he speculates the missing aircraft's new possible track means a hijacker could have, quote unquote, bailed out. When it comes to finding M370, there's never been much to go on. Shortly after this Boeing 770 took off, its radar, transponders, and communication systems were all shut down. It was a sinister, deliberate act. We don't know that for a fact, but it meant that once out of ground-based radar range, nobody could quote-unquote see where the aircraft was. But whoever tried to make the aircraft invisible overlooked one thing: engine monitoring sensors that would automatically report to overhead satellites. Searchers use these signals, along with infrared flight speeds and courses, to mark out a broad patch of the Southern Ocean far to the southwest of Perth and the most likely place the plane went down. But despite extensive surface and subsurface searches, nothing has been found. Now, Professor Martin Christensen, an engineer at Aarhus University in Denmark, Aarhus, come to Aarhus, has published a new mathematical analysis of the plane's radar and satellite data. We know that instead of heading north to Vietnam, the flight deviated to the east. It was tracked by military radar until it passed out of range into the Andaman Sea, apparently headed towards India. From this point, the only handshake calls to the F-31 satellite sitting above the Indian Ocean reveal the Boeing was still in the air. The fractional time difference between the handshake, when the handshake was sent and when it was received by Insmarat, offered investigators a clue. That time gap revealed how far the aircraft was from the satellite at the time it was made, but little more. So each of the hourly calls allowed a planet-spinning circle to be plotted, with Insmarat at its center. M370 was somewhere on those circles at the time each circle signal was received. The vast bulk of the circle could be eliminated through simple math. How far along each arc could the aircraft, flying at its maximum speed and within the range of the fuel it carried, have been capable of reaching in the time since its last confirmed position? Problem is, each of the seven recorded handshakes produced a broader and broader range of possibilities. However, most of these could also be eliminated. Those arcs extended over land and populated areas, also covered by civilian and commercial radars. M370 hadn't been detected along any of those paths, which is why the investigators plotted possible tracks that took the Boeing 777 out to sea. But the handshakes held one more clue. It's called Doppler shift. It's the minuscule stretching of a signal as its source moves towards or away from the receiver. The Doppler shift reveals the relative velocity of the flight and Insmarat at each time each handshake was made. And the satellite was in orbit that kept it almost stationary over the Indian Ocean. Once again, it's not a smoking gun. There's a broad range of relative velocities that can be produced by an aircraft flying at different angles at different speeds. But it does offer another set of boundaries within which M370 must have followed. It all comes down to probabilities. And that's where Christensen comes in. He's built a mathematical model that takes into account all of these limiting events. His argument is that the flight can only have gone down where the boundaries of speed, fuel, handshake signals, and Doppler shift all overlap. And he says, we find four independent solutions with the final part of the flight following a great circle, his research paper declares. Two of these could immediately be dismissed. One was over India, the other over China. Both would have taken the Boeing through radar and mobile phone networks, and neither site would have produced the debris washed up on the Indian Ocean shores. A third location conforms with the area already searched, but despite two extensive and expensive searches, no trace of the aircraft has been found there, but the fourth probable site has not been investigated. Our best solution leads to an entirely different location, agreeing with other data from debris, acoustics, and an eyewitness report, providing a clear conclusion where to find the plane. The final patch of the Earth's surface, which lines up with all of the flight's parameters, sits in the Indian Ocean to the southwest of Australia's Christmas Island. It seems counterintuitive. To get there, the flight must have done an abrupt U-turn in the Bay of Bengal and then flown down along the south coast of Indonesia. We propose instead a new focus search of whatever this area is, with a slightly elliptical shape along the seventh arc and a total length of 140 kilometers of width and 30 kilometers of length, Christensen's report reads. The probability of finding the plane there is, by math, above 90%. Departing from his math, Christensen points to the unexplained nature of the barnacles found on the debris as conforming with a crash in the nutrient-poor but warm waters off Indonesia before entering the colder Western Australian current. However, the line of circumstantial evidence does not stop here, where some readers may already be convinced. Christensen reports to an eyewitness account from a fishing boat to the north of Bandar Aceh at Indonesia's extreme western end that night. It reported a westward flying aircraft diving to a lower altitude and making a turn southward. This account was one among many such sightings, including from the Maldives far to India's south. But this one fits with Christensen's plots, although he indulges in some wild speculation. There's also something special about the Christmas Island route going through the intertropical convergence zone, where satellite direction and long-range radar are hampered by tropical thunderstorms, indicating intelligent planning. Most likely, the perpetrator, Zha, also knew about the handshakes and deliberately directed and timed the flight to get close to the worst possible mathematical data entanglement with satellite moving through spatial correlation, making it almost impossible to find the plane because this allows for a multitude of solutions with similar fitting quality. Why take such drastic actions? The only plausible explanations are that they wanted to land in Banda Aceh or abort the flight by parachute. Since the aeroplane did not land, the only option is parachuting. So he goes on to say that the pilots parachuted out of it. So that's just one mathematical thing. But a lot of people, and a lot of scientists keep going back to Christmas Island, saying we're looking for it in the wrong place. And why has no one done a serious look into Christmas Island? Because they really haven't, which is also like, why? Why haven't they? Right? You know?
Yeah. After all that money. Interesting.
Yeah. So another conspiracy theory is that there was a terrorist attack, perhaps a jihadi attack, and it was flown to Afghanistan. However, this one was mostly purported by Rupert Murdoch on Fox News. So who knows? But that was, and that also, you know, grabs public's attention because the U.S. loves to fire the flames with a terrorist attack. There's no real proof that it was terrorists, but that is one of them. Another one, and this one is pretty wild, that it was hijacked. We don't know by who, and flown to U.S. military base Diego Garcia. This is one of the biggest ones and the one that people keep coming back to. The proof for this is that the co-pilot's mobile phone contact pinged off cell phones with the plane's westward turn, consistent with a flight towards Diego Garcia. The Daily Mirror reports that the captain had trained on landing in the Indian Ocean with short runways using flight simulators, trained to land on 5 separate runways, all 1,000 meters long, which is short. Namely, on this flight simulator, Diego Garcia and Male International Airport, which is actually spelled MALE International Airport, which made me laugh. Is this like a airport just for men? So this all comes out in the news. And then the FBI comes out and says, I love this quote. There is, quote unquote, nothing suspicious whatsoever, which to me is like, are we overcompensating?
There's the most suspicious response of all time.
Absolutely. There's nothing suspicious whatsoever. Like, this whole fucking thing is suspicious. The FBI is like, nope, don't worry about it. Nothing suspicious. Everything's fine. And right by Diego Garcia, a Maldive newspaper, and this was mentioned in that article, says residents of Kudahuru, I think it's called, and this is multiple people report this. It's like a little island off the Maldives. Report seeing a low-flying jumbo jet at 6:15 p.m., so that's about, a.m., 5-6 hours after the plane took off, with red stripes, which the Malaysian airline has, flying very, very close to ground, and they heard huge loud noises. This is like hundreds of people from this island that are saying they saw it. It's not just one person. And they just like, everybody just kind of like doesn't talk. It's like, oh no, it's no big deal. Nope. You guys are all crazy. Like gaslight the fuck out of these people.
Mass hysteria.
But there were all sorts of eyewitnesses. And to come back to that. So this I was going to mention later, but I guess we'll get into it now. So I called my friend Nina's husband, Matt, who, when this was all going on, Matt and I got like really drunk one night and stayed up until like 4 in the morning talking about conspiracy theories from this thing. Cause Matt is just like us. He like loves to talk about this shit. Amazing. So I called him and I was like, do you remember this conversation we had like 8 years ago when we stayed up till 4 in the morning talking about Malaysia, the Malaysian flight? And he was like, oh, a little bit, but he did some research for me in this phone conversation. He was like, yeah. And he found this, and this is so funny to me. There was an American passenger on the flight, Philip Wood, who this was on 4chan. So like, this is probably nonsense. This part is probably nonsense, but it is fascinating, who posted on 4chan as Philip would that it was just a black picture. And I'll read the Reddit post on it because it's, do you want me to read the Reddit post or is that too much?
No, go off.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Okay. All right.
I absolutely want you to read the Reddit post.
Yeah. So it's fucking wild. It's fucking wild. So the Reddit post is, this is a theory that the plane was either hijacked or the US military was in on it, something that the plane was definitely derailed to Diego Garcia. Why? We don't know. Was there terrorists on the flight? Was it? We don't know why. We don't know. But this is the whole Reddit post on this Philip Wood situation. I read through hundreds of posts on this topic, but wanted to give it a fresh look after some research to get some thoughts. First, let me start by saying, based on all that I read, this probably has a higher chance of being a hoax than true. But that said, to get started, I want to cover a few areas. One, the message itself and the words in the message and the likelihood of a hoaxer using such words. Because again, this guy, Philip Wood, posts this picture to 4chan and, I'll get to the message in a second. Two, additional details not mentioned in prior discussions. So the first message says, I have been held hostage by unknown military personnel after my flight was hijacked and I am blindfolded. I work for IBM and I have managed to hide my cell phone in Reddit. It says expletive, but where did he hide it? Guess where he hid his cell phone?
I mean, his ass? I don't know.
His ass. That is absolutely correct.
Where else would you put it?
That is absolutely correct. But like an iPhone up your ass, like, I mean, I guess they were smaller back then, but still, it's a lot.
They were thick though.
Well, yeah. Well, everyone likes a little girth.
And maybe he didn't have an iPhone.
Maybe he didn't. But 2014, maybe he had a BlackBerry. Smartphone.
He'd have been
no,
a BlackBerry. not in
2014. It was something that would take some. Hope he had lube on him to get it up his ass. I don't know.
But what a hero, though.
What a hero. But when Matt and I were talking, Matt was like, I just remember a dude had a phone up his ass. I was like, I don't remember that. He was like, no, for sure. It's a phone up the ass. And he was right. So in case anyone's trying to hide stuff, just remember, you can always just shove your phone up your ass. So
it's your prison pocket.
Yeah, it's your prison pocket. I work for IBM and I've managed to hide my cell phone in my expletive ass during the hijack. I've been separated from the rest of the passengers and I am in a cell. My name is Philip Wood. I think I've been drugged as well and I cannot think clearly. Okay, so this is back to the Reddit post. To me, this doesn't sound like a hoax in my opinion. First, there is no at-fault party or blame party or nothing in the news to latch on to come up with the story. Second, someone had to choose this particular passenger, then dream up some scheme to take a dark photo, then pretend it came from somewhere by changing the EXIF data, which is possible, of course, but they don't seem to have an axe to grind. So on this photo, you know how like every photo has data attached to it?
Yeah.
On this photo, the data did say it was at David Garcia, that it was on March 8th at the time. So all the data on it adds up, but you can.
The geolocation.
Yep. All of that adds up, but I guess you can change it. Obviously I'm not great with technology, but I guess that is possible. But they don't seem to have an axe to grind. There's nothing unusual about the words in the message. It doesn't mention where they are. They don't know. The whole phone in the butt thing could mean that he shoved it down the back of his pants. Who knows? Since the message was posted, it has been confirmed that he does work for IBM. He does have an iPhone. So it was an iPhone. And his significant other. Yep. There you go. iPhone right up the ass. And his significant other mentioned something about him being alive, someone telling her about a military jet escort, etc. Also, an earlier story had him in a conversation on the plane with somebody in China. People questioned how the phone could post to a 4chan.org, because I think in China they don't have access to 4chan. I don't remember. That is the site it went to. Yeah, yeah. I watched that QAnon documentary and there's a lot about 4chan. I think it can only operate in America because of freedom of speech. This is the site it went to. There's an app to post to that site, which just happens to be very popular in Kuala Lumpur, where he was living. Then, of course, we have the General McInerney, who has been all over Fox News, and I've seen him on Fox myself saying this, that the plane was taken to Pakistan. And I remember that, too. He kept coming, this general kept coming on and was like, no, this is something is fucked up is going on. And then all of a sudden he stopped talking. You have no plane found. And even if it is found conveniently, where it will take a lot of time to find and bring up, there's no guarantee it wasn't somewhere else first, which is true, right? The plane could have landed and then they could just explode it and throw it out over the ocean. Then you have satellite data and Boeing data, and no one knows a thing about where this plane is. Do you believe that? I don't. To me, it seems just as likely this plane is on the ground somewhere as in the water, and the message, given what we heard from Mr. Wood's significant other, the comments from the general, and the lack of quote-unquote hoax angst, which is common in many hoaxes, like the Obama to have Russian troops on the Super Bowl type stuff, Obama's birth certificate, there's always an agenda. There is no agenda here. IBM people are more likely to use things like 4chan bulletin boards. It's popular where he lives, and there is an app to post on it. In any cover-up, there are always crazy things to go on and people changing facts, but all of the things stated here seems to make sense and came out of nowhere. Why not do a hoax blaming some party? Say you are the pilot or the co-pilot, or take a blurry picture of the plane and Photoshop it. Have you ever seen a hoax with a black picture before? Philip Wood was on the plane messaging a guy in China during the flight, despite rules against using a cell phone use. Another early story, and this was confirmed later on. Also, why hardly no mention of the official news about how 20 people worked for the same semiconductor company that works on military radar systems were on the flight? I mean, they picked apart almost every other fact on this flight. Why not that one? You can easily confirm that info for yourself. In any case, let's take two theories. One, it's a hoax and the plane is in the bottom of the South Indian Ocean with everyone aboard. And two, it isn't a hoax and it's true. Supporting it's a hoax means someone dreamed this all up to post a dark photo to say nothing, really. They edited the EXIF data, randomly chose this dude from the flight list, and somehow missed the correct GPS for Diego Garcia by a few miles. Then, when the photo was posted, someone else hacked it and made it different, so forth and so forth. The plane flew to the South Indian Ocean, yet no debris or plane has been found. This was posted in 2014. Obviously, it's been found now, but years later. The significant other didn't really hear that there was a military escort from her source, and the whole thing is made up as well. And the general on Fox doesn't have a clue, since the plane can't be in Pakistan if it's on the bottom of the ocean. Or the message was true, the significant other was telling the truth, the general is sort of on track, and the plane is on the ground somewhere, and that is why no wreckage to find, and why the Chinese want the serial numbers on the black boxes, so when they come up from the water, they can confirm it is indeed this plane. Also, the cell phone still ringing, we'll get to that in a second, as opposed to going to voicemail, makes sense now as well. And the boatloads of phony leads, lack of U.S. equipment in the area, and so on make a lot of sense as part of a disinformation campaign, because the Garcia Air Base is owned by the U.S. It seems to me it is just as likely the message was real as not real, looking at the facts. Actually, the thought that it isn't real put way more facts out of alignment. So there's like, you know, who knows? Like, it easily could have been a hoax post. I'm not, you know, convinced of that, right. But it is weird. Like, it is true. He didn't have any agenda. Things did match up from it. And then that's another part of the theories, the phantom calls. So when this all went public and they knew the flight was lost, obviously all the family members are calling the people on the flight.
Yeah.
All of these cell phones are ringing, which is weird, right? Because if your phone is off, it goes straight to voicemail. Always.
Off, destroyed, something, yeah.
Yeah. And the thing that is so strange to me about this is I would get it if they, because the response to this was, okay, well, networks have quote unquote ring backs. Even after a cell phone is destroyed, it will still ring back. But that doesn't make any sense to me because, like, if my phone is off, you call it, it doesn't ring. Like, if I get water damage on my phone, it doesn't ring. And okay, I would understand this explanation if it was like, oh, it was a glitch in the system and it was one cell phone and there's this glitch ring back coming on.
Yeah.
But it was everybody. It was everybody. All these family members calling and the phones are ringing. So to me, are all these phones on the bottom of the ocean? I don't think so. They're ringing. That's weird. It's a weird, anomaly to happen to every single.
That's a ton of different phone carriers. We don't know if they even are like American phone carriers or Malaysian or Chinese.
They weren't.
You know, they're from all over.
Philip Wood was the only American on the flight. So they certainly weren't American. Yeah. So like I get, you know, they just blasely say, well, no, it's ring backs. That's what networks do. But it isn't. Like, I've called people when their phone's off. Like, the phone doesn't ring.
Yeah, you're telling not gonna gaslight me with this shit. No.
Right. 227 people. And this is like them calling them, you know, 8 hours after the flight went off. At this point, they're saying the flight's at the bottom of the ocean. All of those phones should not be ringing. But they all were ringing. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Yep.
That's my biggest thing now, not knowing as much as I did, that it's horseshit that it crashed.
It's horseshit. I am convinced. I have no idea what happened to this flight, but I am convinced it wasn't just like something happened. You know, like something happened. The next theory is crew suicide. This one also gets crazy. Captain Zahari Ahmad Shah was the main captain. As I said, they've already found that he had this flight simulator that he did the 5 runs constantly over, one of them being towards the Garcia airport. On top of that, and again, as I said, the FBI says absolutely nothing suspicious. However, later on, there's a leak from the FBI that confirms they found this flight simulator and all the data from it was correct. He was doing these simulations. So the FBI, big surprise, lied to the public. So he was doing these simulations. That is confirmed. It was leaked. It was confirmed information, unless that's bullshit, but it is. I mean, 12th house, right? Who the fuck knows? But so then it comes down to, did this captain have personal motivations or was it a political thing? Was America involved? We don't know. Here's the facts on this. His wife and 3 kids on March 7th, the day before the flight, had moved out. He was accused of having an affair. I don't know if it was confirmed that he was having an affair, but a lot of people said he was having an affair. Like his friends, like this was, and the wife and kids move out a day before. Right before he left on the flight, there was a 2-minute phone call to his cell phone from an unidentified woman using a false identity on a burner phone. So whatever that is, whether it's an affair, whether it's a political operative, that's a little shady, right?
Mega shady.
Mega shady. So they don't know who the woman was.
No one
was from a burner
in their regular life uses a burner phone. They don't.
Correct. And like, what was this 2-minute call right before they go off? I don't know if it was his lover calling him or if it was, you know, Agent Vanaya. Who knows? But it's fucking weird. He also was a huge supporter of the Malaysian opposition politician candidate right before that election, Anwar Ibrahim, who had just on March 7th, again, the day before, been sentenced to jail. And here we go. This is an anal episode. Had been sentenced to jail after he got an acquittal on a sodomy charge. So you can like legit go to jail for butt fucking in Malaysia.
Was it sodomy or were they coming after him for being a homosexual?
It's just said sodomy. I don't know.
Okay.
I can look it up right now. Okay. So I just did a little quick take on this. It was definitely a gay thing. He was fired from the cabinet on the 2nd of September in 1998 amid police reports that he was under investigation. The following day, he was expelled from UMNO. Anwar's former speechwriter and Anwar's adopted brother were arrested under suspicion of engaging in homosexual acts. So maybe you can have you can have cis butt sex in Malaysia, but not, I don't know if you can or not, but 5 days later, they were given a jail sentence of 6 months after pleading guilty to quote unquote unnatural sex. Get the fuck out of here with Anwar.
Boring.
They later recanted their confessions, appealing to the sentence, claiming to have been coerced into pleading guilty. Oh God, wow, this is crazy. Then he got a black eye. There's DNA. Oh my God. During the trial, a mattress was presented to court, supposedly stained with Anwar's semen. This was submitted as DNA evidence of Anwar's sexual acts. Anwar denied having anything to do with the mattress, although the DNA test came out positive. But like, your DNA can be on a mattress, you know, mm-hmm. no matter what. Oh, but then again, Lim Kong, a DNA chemist, testified during the trial that DNA taken from 10 of the 13 semen stains on the mattress matched Anwar's. So he definitely came 10 times. Good for him.
I just would lie and be like, no, I was just blasting rope. I wasn't.
Yeah, totally. Excuse.
I'm not going to go to jail.
Just seasoning the meat, Kay. I was just having a little afternoon delight. Oh, my God. Not oh, my God. And then it comes up again. It comes up again on June 28, 2008. An aide to Anwar Ibrahim lodged a police report claiming that he had been forcibly sodomized by Anwar. When it was put to him that the 61-year-old man is unlikely to be able to physically overpower a 24-year-old man, Aslan changed his complaint to homosexual conduct by persuasion. Sodomy, even if consensual, is punishable by 20 years imprisonment and whipping. Whipping! Under section 377B of the Malaysian Penal Code. Oh my God. Anwar responded to the complaint that it was politically motivated and intended to discredit him and called it a complete fabrication. Oh my God. So they're going after this guy constantly saying he's gay. And apparently that gets 20 years. Is he, I wonder if he's, he obviously
is a homosexual.
Right. I mean, he couldn't be and running from, obviously he couldn't be. I mean, he could be homosexual, but he couldn't be openly homosexual. Right. Wow. Okay. Well, sorry. That was a tangent. Let's just call this an episode, anal hijinks, I guess. iPhones up there, going to prison, whipping.
I'll come up with something special. Don't worry.
Yeah. Some acquittal had been overturned the day before this flight went off. And the captain was very politically active. So was he super upset about that? We don't know. He also had a very active social calendar, but had made no, like on his phone, all this stuff, like very documented, like detailed calendar. But after March 8th, when the flight went off, he had nothing on his calendar, which is very strange for somebody who keeps, super suspicious.
Someone that type A, yeah, no way.
Right. Why do you have nothing after March 8th? So there's a lot of suspicion about him. And I think, like, I don't know if it was a personal thing for him or he was involved in, but it does seem to me that he was privy to this, whether it was a suicide mission, whether it was, you know, I don't know. Another piece of evidence for this, and a lot of papers have reported on this, was the direct turn, and I talked about this in the beginning, that it took to fly very slowly over Penang, which it did. Mm. This is like tracked on data. His hometown, his whole family was in Penang. So a lot of people are saying this was a deliberate and the plane slowed down and you had to take like a very weird turn that you would have to plan out and know to fly over this airspace. So it was like, if this was a suicide mission or whatever, whether he was coerced, whatever it was like, I want to take one last look at my hometown, like an emotional connection. Yeah. And that is confirmed. That did happen. The plane did go over there. There's no reason for it to. So that's another thing that is quote unquote evidence for that. Another theory was that there was a fire. There had been an earlier incident on a Boeing 777 on July 29th, 2011 on Egyptian flight 667. It was before the flight went off, but if the flight had gone off, like even 20 minutes later, it would have happened in flight. There was an oxygen fed cockpit fire because there was like a oxygen was coming in where it wasn't supposed to. The flight was still on the ground. The flight ignited. It ruined the flight controls, the instruments, and burned a hole through the bottom of the plane. The firefighters arrived in 3 minutes, but it took 90 minutes to extinguish this fire. Like this would, if this happened in flight, done. Mm-hmm. You're done. And they're saying maybe that affected the technology, you know, the recording systems, and the pilots tried to make an emergency landing. But again, the flight was in air for 6 hours. So that one doesn't sound great. The next one is that it was shot down. Rush Limbaugh was a huge proponent of this one. So again, grain of salt. But here's another one of these quotes. This is one from the Malaysian officials. They say the flight being shot down was, quote unquote, highly not possible. I love these like very fishy responses. That's highly not possible.
Yeah. Okay.
Right? Like, okay. How about we just say it's near impossible? Highly not possible. Okay. All right.
Yeah. Like, why would you say it like that?
Yeah. Yeah. Nigel Cawthorn, who I believe is a British national, suggested that it was shot down in a joint U.S. Thai strike fighter jet exercise, which was going on. So it's possible. And that this was a cover up to try to cover up the mistake. And then both Thai nationals and U.S. nationals intentionally sent searchers astray and gave like weird coordinates. But you know, I don't know about that, but those are the main theories. So they have found little bits of debris, that wash up ashore, but they haven't found much. And the debris itself, again, that doesn't prove that the flight wasn't somewhere else first. It doesn't even necessarily equate to the fact that it was that plane. Obviously, tomfoolery can happen. People can lie. So yeah, as I said, I can go down. There's a bunch of documentaries on this. There's books on it. I would love to go deeper into these theories. So I'm happy to do it. If anyone is
If anyone's curious, interested, we can do a mini-sode revival and just be like, part two, baby. No big deal.
Yeah. If there's any theory that really,
resonates,
piques your curiosity. Yeah. Cause I think I personally am definitely going to watch a documentary on it definitely maybe read one of those books. But to me personally, I don't know about you. I have no idea what actually happened, but to me, I don't think it was just a flight mistake. You know, the black box was turned off. All the stuff with the pilot. I think the pilot was definitely involved in some way. I have no idea if he did parachute out. I have no idea if it did land and the passengers were taken hostage or I don't know, but
a phone call from a burner phone is mega suspicious.
Yeah. And the fact that there were all these simulated flights over all these areas that the FBI, I think the U.S. is involved. I think there's definitely something to the Garcia airport thing. I don't know if it was, maybe they knew it was a terrorist attack and they took it down. Maybe I have no idea why it was, but it does seem like the U.S. is trying to cover something up since the FBI was like, whatever weird quote.
Nothing
they had
to see
like,
here.
Nothing to see here. Yeah. Yeah. And they're like, nope. That was all falsely reported. And then the leak of the classified document comes out. That's like, no, they definitely did find the flight simulator. And he definitely was simulating these weird flight things that the airplane did take and trying to land on these weird things. So my personal take on it is that the flight did land did land somewhere. Mm-hmm. Oh, and this is the other thing. Another theory is that, this one doesn't seem as probable to me now since it's been, you know, 8 years, 9 years since the flight, that it was hijackers, jihadists, whatever, or another government that wanted the plane to land in this remote area so that they could then refurbish the plane to be like an instrument of like death, like have all these things on it that a normal plane, a Boeing jet could obviously not have, so that they were like outfitting it to be like this huge terrorist plane that could like drop bomb, you know, do all this shit. But to me, maybe they're playing the long game, but it's been 9 years. So I don't know about that, but I think something shady happened. Yeah.
Well, this is like an episode of Unsolved Mysteries where I get frustrated at the end, cause I learned nothing.
I know.
And it's unsolved.
Well, you did learn something. You just,
I learned
don't
that
know
I'm
what
suspicious
happened.
About this shit.
I know. I'm super suspicious. And yeah, I want to know more about that burner call. Cause like my thing is, even if it's a mistress, right? Even if he is having this affair.
Why does she have a burner
phone? Okay.
It's fucking weird.
Well, yeah. Why does she have a burner phone? Why can they not find out where it came from? And also, okay, I get it. His wife leaves him the day before and takes the kid. So maybe he's in this, like, that would make more sense to me if it was, just a normal crash or like a, but clearly this was planned. Clearly he's been doing the simulation and like, that seems like a lot of trouble to go to if you're just like, oh, I'm having this affair and my wife's leaving me. Like, just, you know, why would you make it? And the fact that nobody can find this plane, like, this was, well, people who knew what they were doing were involved in this, I think.
I don't know. There's a lot of questions here. I have more questions now than when I started.
I know. But that's the 12th house, baby. That's the 12th house. And
on brand.
On brand. And as I pulled that tarot card, the moon. The moon is illusions, confusion. Nobody knows what's going on. Everything's being shrouded. It doesn't make any sense. And that's what this is. Like, it just doesn't. It doesn't make any sense. But I'm pretty certain there's more than meets the eye to this.
Oh, yeah. 100%.
Yeah.
Well, I guess it's time for us to hit the old dusty trail. If you have any questions,
I guess it is.
Please hit us up on any of the links that I will provide for you, like I do every time, at the bottom of the notes for the episode. So if you want us to explore some certain things, we can and we will.
And I would love to, for anyone who listens to this message, I would love to have like a little thread about it on the page. Because I'm very curious to hear other people's thoughts on it too.
Yes, please. Give us your thoughts. Give us your theories. We want to hear them. We want to discuss it.
Yeah, it really is like an episode of Unsolved Mysteries. Call in the tip line on the 12th House Tomfoolery Facebook page.
I mean, if we ever get enough response on an episode, I will happily go live on the page and answer as many questions as they want.
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. We're down. You guys don't understand. Just go
for it. We're
down. Let's go. Yeah.
We're down. We're down. And I think the biggest lesson from this is be careful what you put up your ass, right? Be careful.
I don't know. It seemed to work out for one of them. It was a 50-50.
Well, who knows if it worked out. It actually didn't work out that well because I read another article from his spouse who was like saying all that. Actually, it was a beautiful article in Newsfeed about – or Newsweek about how she got remarried and how her and her new husband have this relationship and very open vulnerability. And he's like, do you still love – Philip? And she's like, yes, I'll always love him, but he's gone and now I love you. Right. And how they're working through their trauma together. So, and I do think that's lovely that she can say, yes, of course I still love him, because of course she does.
But at least she can be honest. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, she should still love him. You know, he left, but it's good that she can find a healthy relationship after that too.
Okay. All right. Well, I got to say my line. Say bye to the people, Kate.
Bye guys.
Bye.
Me.